enjoyed that episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week our topic is Secret Six by Gail Simone. And now the cast begins.
Okay, everybody, welcome to another raggedy episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast.
Okay.
Why not? My name's Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
And Jen.
Hello.
And this week we read Secret Six by Gail Simone and drawn by the awesome Nicola Scott. And it has one of the, I think, coolest superhero teams to come out in, like, the last 10 years.
Would we really call them superheroes?
Metahumans? No, all metahumans, though.
They're more
Deadshot's,
like
just a badass.
Well, they're not heroes.
No. They're mercenaries.
Yeah. Super mercenaries. Okay.
Yeah, they're super mercenaries. That's a good way to put it.
Bam, super. Yeah, because they worked for Matt Hatter for this, like, run.
I mean, they're not really doing bad things. I mean, well,
they
kind of
are.
They kind of are.
I mean, they're breaking somebody out of jail.
Dude, that shit the Catman did in Africa was hella bad.
Yeah.
Kind of fucked up.
Yeah, but that was in the past, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Deadshot's done lots of fucking.
Yeah, but he didn't feel bad about it.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, I kind of got the sense when he was talking about turning good, like he just wanted to do it for shiggles because he was bored of being bad. So, okay. What did you guys like this one?
I love this.
I loved it as well.
Okay, good.
Hella good.
Yeah, so awesome.
This is really fun. Who is your favorite on the team?
Ooh. Can we go first?
We can go team member by team member. Who liked Ragdoll?
Me.
I liked him.
Yeah? Was he like your favorite?
He might have been. It's really a tough call, but I liked how creepy he was and the way his, the letterer italicized his words in this really weird way, but he's just so incredibly depraved in all the, like, worst ways, but you can tell he's not evil.
Yeah.
And I like that. He's just, like, fucked up.
Yeah, he's just into a little bit of depravity. I think his lettering is done like that because he's supposed to be from Apocalypse.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think he and Knockout, I think, escaped Apocalypse together.
Oh.
Which is why, like, they escaped because they're not pure evil, so they don't belong in Apocalypse. But they don't turn good like, say, Big Barda, who also escaped. I'm pretty sure he's from Apocalypse.
Well, I'm going to have to look it up.
Yeah. Get on that Googles. I like him, too, for, like, exactly the same reasons. I like how always he'll mention, oh yeah, I've done the most depraved thing that you're thinking of right now. I did it, it's totally fine. And then Deadshot always steps in, dude, you don't have to fucking tell me. I don't need to know this shit.
It always involves food.
Yes.
Like, didn't he ask to be buried in a vat of pudding or something?
Gravy. He's gravy. Like, dip me in a vat of gravy was his request when they got to the casino.
I appreciate that.
What about you, David?
Who's my favorite, or did I like Ragdoll?
Either one.
Yeah, I like Ragdoll. He was the funny white guy on the team, so I liked that.
Okay.
I don't know what to say about him.
I kind of like Catman.
What I loved about Ragdoll was his facial expressions. When he didn't have his mask on, and he's like, his head's like upside down, and he has like this weird smile, and he's like, you know, he says funny things.
Yeah.
I don't know. I
he's entertaining. I think one of my favorites was Catman, though.
I enjoyed Catman. He was humorous, but not in the same way at all.
Yeah. Well, I think except for Scandal Savage and Deadshot, most of these characters existed in continuity way before and had been sort of lost, fallen through the cracks. Like, they were characters that had been forgotten for so long. And then Gail Simone just picked them and said, I am going to revive your character. Catman did start out as a Batman villain. And then he got fat, actually.
Oh, yeah.
He got fat and lazy and turned really, like, into a crappy villain. And then became a Green Arrow villain for a while. Like, he was fat and horrible. And then even Green Arrow kicked his ass repeatedly. And he was skulked off into a corner for everybody knew. And I guess Gail Simone retconned and said when he skulked off, he wasn't going off and burying himself in a loathful pity of Oreos. He was going off and turning into a fucking badass. Like, that's what he did.
They showed a clip of, like, Green Arrow and Speedy harassing him.
Yes.
Pinning him to a wall. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
Like,
he used to be really, and that's why I like the way that was done. Like, no. He wasn't going into a loathful, self-pitying vat of horrible. He was going and training. He's like, I'm fucking sick of this bullshit. I like that. That's cool.
I really liked his interactions with Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That whole fight was excellent, mostly was because really he's like, did you have Mexican food? I smell cumin and cilantro. And then, like, at the end, they're, like, having this, like, big, tense standoff, and Batman's just like, I had a burrito. It's so excellent.
Well, I think because at a certain level, like, Batman respects him, you know? Respects him and, like, respects his tracking ability, and Batman says, all right, great, you got a couple hits in. But to be fair, getting a couple hits in against Batman is legitimately, you're pretty fucking good if you can get some hits in against Batman. So I think there's a certain respect there, and Batman wants to let him know that he was right. Let him know, yeah, there, you did smell Mexican food, you were right. I had a burrito.
Well, I love that Gail Simone made it a point to have them interact for, like, an entire issue, because they're, like, so similar. You could tell, like, even without the interaction, you know that Catman is, like, basically
a rip-off
of Batman. I mean, their names even rhyme.
Yeah.
They're one letter apart. One letter. Even in the alphabet.
Yeah, that's right. It's the next letter over.
It's just the next, exactly, it's the next letter.
So, like, Bizarro Universe would be Datman?
Yeah. But see, what's great is
the
that...
the other way.
Well, it'd be Atman, actually.
Atman, that's right, yeah. Okay.
But it's like, okay, we all know what this is. We all know who Catman is. So let me put him next to Batman so you can see that he is, like, a legitimate character. He's not just a ripoff. I mean, he is a ripoff, but...
Yeah.
He's an awesome ripoff. And he is his own character. He's not like this guy who was like, man, Batman's awesome, but I like cats, so I'm gonna be Catman. Because their costumes look alike. Their costumes are almost the same, too.
They're, like, the same, yeah.
They even have a symbol on their chest.
In the same place.
Exactly.
And I really like the way that Catman sort of deconstructed Batman and his whole being an idea, being bigger, and scaring everybody. Like, how he started off saying, this is how you see everybody. Like, I'm looking down on you. I want to subjugate the crime and filth below me. Like, I want to make you all fear me from on high. But Catman's standing up there, too. You know? And I really, really like that scene where he's like, you know, you have everybody fooled, but not me. Well, maybe a little bit me. I'm still a little scared of you.
Legitimately.
Rightly.
It's Batman.
Yeah, it's fucking Batman. Like, even if you tear him down, right, and get rid of all of the idea and fear of Batman, still motherfucking Batman. Yeah, he's still a first-class martial artist, world's best detective, all this other...
Carries kryptonite in his pocket, just in case.
Right, just in case I happen to fight Superman? What the fuck?
Who's, like, his bro.
Yeah.
He's like, just in case.
Yeah.
He's super prepared.
That's his real superpower, is his super preparedness.
I like it. It's useful. I also... Man, I think part of the reason I really did like that burrito statement was Catman goes further in his commentary, and he's like, I like that. It humanizes you. It makes you a person. And I think that's kind of the way the audience is meant to feel about that conversation. Like, Batman... Like, we know Bruce Wayne has to eat and sleep. At the same time, we don't necessarily see him doing those things, unless we're reading really weird Neil Adams comics involving bananas. But, like, usually you see Bruce Wayne in his, like... you know, board member persona, or he's, you know, he's doing something science-y in the Batcave, or he's, you know, he's still being Batman, or he's a more swank Batman, but here it's just, like, he hung out and did a stakeout and ate a burrito in the Batmobile, and that's just, like, that's what a person would do, and that was really cool.
And you figure he's gotta be hanging out there for a couple hours, you know?
Yeah, he's hungry.
And I like how Catman even brings that up. Like, you're not taking that Batmobile through a drive-thru. Where the fuck did you even get the food? Like,
I'm sure Alfred gives it to him, like, beforehand.
Yeah, I'm sure he, like, had it in the Bat pouch or something when he headed out. Or, like,
he was prepared.
Batman put it in the trunk of the... Or Alfred put it in the trunk of the Batmobile for him.
Like, here's your burrito, sir.
I know you're gonna need this burrito later, Bruce. You're like a son to me. You need a balanced diet.
Is Alfred an expert Mexican cuisine?
Oh, God. And speaking of balanced diet, I really loved Bane in this.
Yes. He was really creepy, though.
Yes.
Like, she needs a father figure.
Right?
Put your head in my lap.
Yeah, like, really? I love how he just called it out. That's what's great about Bane, is, like, there's nothing... He's not hiding anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like how she at first freaks out and she's like, "You're just like every other man," and then he's like, "Put your head in my lap." She's like, "Fine," and she takes a nap. He's...
Well, because I think she picks that up from him, not like the father figure thing, but picks up like Bane's not hiding anything.
Yeah.
Bane, like what he said, give nothing. Give no quarter, give no this, give no that. And part of that is probably give no bullshit, right? Like, This is what you're going to get from me. I don't want you that way. I see that you need something, and I want to be here to give you that thing that you need. Put your head in my fucking lap. Right? Like, it's such a weird connection to make, but I think that's what makes this comic so good, and what really is one of Gail Simone's strengths is, like, the personal needs of these characters.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm sure most writers would have skipped that scene and hope it was implied, you know? Like, bring in the father figure stuff overtly and then not show you the stuff that happens in the van during an 8-hour trip across in Nevada or some bullshit, you know? But Gail, like, is going to show you that really humanizing scene.
I also really enjoyed how Bane, like, we really get to see how he sticks to his principles here. Because he's like, I do what I find just or right or moral. And... you know, he refuses to take the Venom until it gets to the point where he understands that there's no other option and then he'll take it, because he's not so morally blind that he only sees one path. He can understand, like, the tilt of a situation.
And it's when it matters for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, Deadshot wanted him to take it to save himself. And he was like, no, if death is coming for me, then death is coming for me, and this is the right way to go. Just plain and simple. I'm not going to use this morally wrong thing to save myself. That's not right. But if there's a moral gray area where I'm saving somebody else by using it, and it maybe also happens to save me a little bit, that's good too. But, like, that's where you enter a gray area. And if you judge it to be morally lighter than darker, then fucking do it, because it needs to get done.
Yeah, it was... A lot of the time with comics, we see black and white morality. And... it's really impressive that Gail Simone was able to give us moral complexity in fewer than 10 sentences.
And on a team full of mercenaries.
Yeah.
Where Deadshot is super fucked up.
But even he was very interesting, and there was a lot of complexity to his character, too. I mean, I thought he was just being an asshole when he took off with the thing.
Me too, that was my first reaction.
I was like, okay, this is what Deadshot's doing, and then, what do you know, he's actually trying to help everybody. He's like, fuck you guys, I'm going to help you, whether you like it or not.
Which totally goes against what he said earlier, was his one rule. Just look out for number one.
Mm-hmm.
That is his one rule, is look out for number one. But he threw all that out the window.
Because he's a big softy.
But I like how you even got to see that change in him, too. Because issue one, when that little, like, liquor store is getting robbed. Oh my god.
Man.
That was fucking messed up.
And, like, oh, I like how... Wasn't he saying, like, to Catman, you can't just leave witnesses.
Yeah.
Or they're going to kill the witnesses, and Catman's like, shit, and he goes back and deals with it.
Yeah.
It's like... that was really weird, because I kind of didn't view Catman to lack the moral superiority in that equation. Yet... there we saw him being a dumb shit.
Yeah. So did we get enough of Scandal Savage to say whether or not we liked her?
I liked her dead girlfriend.
Knockout?
Yeah, it was cool that she kept coming back in, like, weird visions that were surprisingly appropriate and only there when, like, Scandal was drunk.
Yeah.
But
drunker on the edge, or...
I don't know, she was okay.
Yeah, I feel like we didn't get enough of her.
Yeah, I think we're supposed to know her character from before, because this ended up spinning out of a title called Villains United, which spun out of Infinite Crisis, I think it was. Right? Infinite Crisis is the one where Superboy Prime goes batshit, right? Yes.
The one where he goes batshit?
The first one where he goes batshit. How
about that? Doesn't he go batshit in Final Crisis, too?
He goes batshit all the time. That's, like, what he does. He has one character mode and it's bad shit.
His power is super whining.
Yes.
That's his real power.
So it is.
I was scrolling through this. I was looking at issue number 3 and there's people stuffed in a small thing in this comic.
Yes, there is.
Not a fridge.
Nope.
But lockers instead.
Oh, I didn't even catch that when I was writing, when I was reading it. Nice little put in there, Gail.
Yeah, I don't know if she did it on purpose, but maybe.
So who else have we talked? Have we not talked about?
I think we talked about everybody.
We could talk about traveling companion Tarantula.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not really one of them, but she was along for the ride.
And she kind of became... I think she kind of ended up siding with them because...
Well, she realizes it's her own best interest.
Yeah.
Like, if she doesn't side with them, she's kind of getting eaten by the horde of meta villains.
That's true.
Speaking of which, I loved that it ended up being the Mad Hatter orchestrating all of it.
I had some very mixed feelings about that.
Why?
It just seemed like a lame villain to be behind it. I mean, I know they were saying, oh, it's probably the Joker or the Riddler. Why couldn't it have been someone, like, unexpected yet not totally lame?
Well, I think it had to be somebody like that because it's unexpected, first of all. And it kind of goes with this whole thing. Like, all these... It's a comic full of villains. The only superhero in this is Batman, and he's in it for one issue and not part of the action at all.
And Huntress has, like, a cameo,
and we keep. And one thing that keeps coming up is humanizing these characters. And the reason Mad Hatter goes through all of this trouble is because people don't like him.
And he wants to have a tea party.
Yeah, people like, he thought he were his friends were jerks party. To him. So he orchestrated this entire thing.
I guess that's true.
And it is kind of his M.O. He is a big baby. He is.
Then he jumps off a bridge after his hat.
Yeah. I mean, he's not written very much because he is one of the more ha-ha, you're pretty lame villains in Batman's Rogues Gallery. But, like, this is kind of what he does. He likes to have a big party. And it's really, really silly, but that's what he's into. And he would be really petty with like that. He would have all of this shit happen, all this pain and suffering, just because he felt a little bit wronged.
Didn't he say something about how they threw him off a cliff or something? Like, a bit more grievous than being disliked? I can't recall.
I don't remember.
Maybe... It might have been in the little... They had a bit of, like, a teaser extra at the end of one of the issues. It could have been in there.
Yeah, I'm trying to find that.
Maybe. Well, and then the other villain, of course, Junior...
Oh, man. Junior.
This is how you write a villain.
Yeah.
This is how you write a villain.
Junior is terrifying.
Aside from the whole, like, Jaws thing, right? Never, don't show the villain until the moment of most horror, right? Aside from that whole thing, it was written awesome before that. You could have had this villain in the crate for like 5 issues and it would have still worked, I think.
The crate was the scariest part because it's like this crate that sucks something in. You don't know if this villain is even corporeal, much less what he or she looks like.
At first, I thought there was a door underneath the crate.
Yeah, that's what I was figuring.
That's what I thought it was. And then you start to see the blood coming out from the crate and you're like, oh, this person A is in the crate and B is... has enough ability while inside the crate to kill somebody. Like, in a horrible way.
And it's not just in the crate, but, like, strong enough to drag resisting people into it.
Yeah.
Like, that thing is scary.
Without having itself come out of the crate at all. You know, like, if I were in a crate and David were trying to pull back away from me and I tried to pull on David, just the way physics work, I would probably come out of the crate a little bit. The
crate would tip over.
Yeah. I mean, think about how strong this character has to be, how frightening and terrifying that is.
And I mean, ooh. David just,
God, she looks horrible.
But, oh God, she is.
Is that part really of her skull scary. Missing above her brow?
I think so, maybe? I don't know.
It looks like, so if you look at her nose...
Sewed on patches.
Yeah, it's like a part of her skin that's sewn on above the eyes. Because she kind of has like a clown look, right? She has the
red around her. I don't even want to look at that.
Sorry.
That's great horrible art.
So should we go into the background on their family.
Well, we forgot Jeanette.
Oh, yeah.
Should we talk about Jeanette a little bit?
I love her.
She's okay. I wish they had said a bit more about her, rather than like, oh, she's a banshee and she runs a casino.
But I like her in that she is like the sister opposite of Ragdoll. Right? Like, Ragdoll's mm-hmm. happy and go, you know, he just seems happy in his depravity, right? And Jeanette's awesome in that she's happy so long as everybody minds their manners. Like, she's the same kind of character, but the flip side. Instead of relishing in the depravity, she really wants the manners. Because, goddammit, she was royalty, and her lineage was not to be touched.
They seem like they could be best friends and have, like, a great time together.
Yes. Because, like, as much as Ragdoll's into the depravity, I think he would really love the dainty funness of having, like, a tea party with Jeanette.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they would have such a weird, fun conversation. I really, really did like her.
She was cool. I just wanted more of her.
Yeah.
Because we only get her for, like, half of the...
Half of the run.
Yeah, half of it. And, I would have liked... She's obviously a really talented fighter. And she's very, I don't know, she's a badass, but I want to see more of that and, like, more of a feature.
Oh, my God, yeah, the way that she fucked up Shark.
Yeah, she just ripped his jaws open. Awesome.
It started off, I'm like,
she tore his arm off earlier.
That was great, because I saw in the one panel where you see her grabbing his arm, I'm like, oh, she's going to throw him. Oh, no, no, no. No, that's not nice enough. She's gonna rip the motherfucker's arm off. And then I love later, he has a little stub of a thing coming
out. Yeah, and teasing him. And that's where she breaks his jaw.
Yes, this is so great. I love it that they tease him for it, too.
Yeah, he deserves it. It's like, well, this sad and plus,
it's a
thing.
It's a room full of villains, right? They're gonna be dicks to each other.
Yeah.
They're not gonna be nice. And I'd be like, oh man, that sucks for you. Right? They're mean people. They're bad people. They're not gonna be supportive in any way.
So,
did we want to go into, like, the little bit of family background on Junior and Ragdoll?
Sure.
Yeah, that was really interesting.
So, I guess their dad was the original Ragdoll.
Right.
Right, and he was a contortionist, as is Junior, but the current Ragdoll had to get surgery.
Right, he wasn't a natural contortionist. Like, on Wikipedia, it says he had to have lubricated cybernetic joints put in.
Hey. Sounds unpleasant.
That's a little bit of a conviction necessary for that.
This is a family with daddy issues.
This is a family with all kinds of big issues. Ways. That's an understatement. Daddy issues in a big way. Yes.
Oof. And I mean the implication, or I think is it stated outright that Junior was like molested? Or raped by her father, which is
it wasn't stated. I think it was implied because Ragdoll says he wanted another son,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's why she was treated the way that she was. And she says, "Oh no, he wanted a little girl."
Yeah.
And I think that it's supposed to be implied from there, or something depraved is implied from that.
There is a like one of the reactions to being the victim of such crimes is not wanting exposure, wanting to be hidden, and that's a huge theme with her. So,
and anybody who even looks at her, she says pervert.
Yeah.
Right, like she has a huge underline of that. Like, the depravity's not just, not like Ragdoll's depraved, right? Ragdoll's depraved in a quote-unquote healthy way, in that he knows he's depraved and he embraces it happily, mm-hmm. you know, whereas she's filled with depravity, and she puts that depravity on everybody else and judges them for it.
Yeah, and it's actually kind of interesting. She doesn't want to be seen, yet she self-mutilates in such a way that she says people should see who she really is, but then when they look, she says, don't. So it's kind of her desires in this way are paradoxical.
Mm-hmm.
She's clearly fucked up.
Yes.
And she kills her poor minion.
Yeah.
Well, the first one gets...
Well, Bane kills the
first
one.
Kills the first one, and then he tries to kill him. The other twin tries to kill himself, and then Junior stops him. And then later, Junior kills him for looking at her.
Yeah.
She calls him pervert. She's
yeah, because up until then, he had never seen her without the cloak and robes and everything.
Right.
And they...
But, and I like them. They were so
yeah,
cool.
I like them, too.
I like... One of them has a life coach.
Yes.
They're just so happy-go-lucky for henchmen.
Yeah. They're wonderful henchmen. And I could never figure out whether or not he really was rooting for them or if he was just fucking with them. Right?
Well, he was, like, rooting for everybody. He wants everybody to lead a happy life and succeed.
But he knows that they won't.
But he's also very apologetic and sympathetic to everybody, even the people that they kill.
Yeah, that's true.
Whereas the other one's just
kinda... like, when Bane's being tortured, he's like, don't worry, guy. You know? It's like, you're gonna die soon, it'll be okay.
Like, you're gonna die either way. Let me help you out, man. Just tell us what we need, and just one, two bullets, you're done. Good.
Yeah.
Easy, peaceful, quiet.
I really like the torture scene. I mean, that sounds really creepy, but...
Jen!
God,
speak about depravity. Jesus.
It was... You don't see that sort of thing. What I liked about it is it wasn't overtly violent in ways you could see.
Yeah.
Yet the implication, the psychological implication was there fully. So you knew that horrible things were happening to Bane, even though, you know, hitting a guy with bricks doesn't bring the whole, like, factor is like pulling out his teeth or putting skewers under his fingernails, something like that.
Yeah, but, I mean, you get hit with a brick in the stomach by somebody who you know is that strong.
Yeah, that's gonna hurt.
I don't care how tough Bane is. That's, you're cracking ribs, you're busting open organs, like...
Well, Bane is...
Bad shit is happening.
Without
inside.
Venom, Bane is just a buff guy.
Yeah, he's just a really buff, tough dude.
I mean, which says a lot, but when you're getting hit with... I think they... He gets... Like, when they 100 check the
count... 100-something bricks. Does it ever get to 100?
Well, they had 500, and they... No. So they... When they first check the count, it's
they
like
480.
487.
Yeah. And then they check it... When they come back later, it gets even lower. Like, it doesn't
well, I think
there.
They stop after Bane kills the first twin.
Yeah.
Man, oh, the way he kills him is so vicious, too.
Well?
He just rips out his throat.
Bane's a vicious motherfucker.
But
like,
his teeth, though? That's really... That's not human. That's an animal thing to do.
Well,
yeah.
These guys are pretty evil. Like, they're... We like them because they're the protagonists, and... We are sympathetic to them, but they're messed up people. Deadshot is an assassin. Bane is the guy who...
Bane is, I think, one of the most threatening villains that's not superpowered in the DC universe.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from being incredibly strong, he is...
He's smart.
Stupid smart. Just insane.
And so, like...
Because his whole conception as a character is that we needed somebody who wasn't just stronger than Batman, but smarter than Batman. So let's make Bane.
Well, and like,
fuck.
Like, I feel like we get glimpses of how evil these characters are, and this is what we get for Bane. This is like his little image, and then I think we kind of get it with Deadshot when he betrays everybody.
Well, I think we get Deadshot in the beginning.
And I think we get Catman at the beginning, too. Or in his flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we get Catman in his flashbacks. And Catman in the beginning, he legitimately is thinking about trying to switch sides, maybe. He just isn't quite there yet to where the fact that it's intuitive. Like, he walks out of the place not even thinking about how the two people that were in there are going to get fucking murdered. Like, it doesn't come into his mind.
Yeah.
And Deadpool, or Deadshot's the one that thinks about it and says, fuck it, I got my cigarettes and cash, I'm leaving. He's like, they deserve it. Lack security.
I don't think we ever really see Scandal being particularly villainous.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe we don't see with everybody, but I think for some of them we do, you know.
Yeah. I mean, Ragdoll's villainy is more hedonistic, but the implication is if you're that depraved, you've done things to other people that maybe they were not willing participants in. But his is more humorous, and then...
I feel like Bane could have, like, knocked him out, right? With Bane could have punched him.
Yeah,
or something.
Or given him a damn fine headbutt.
Yeah, or, like, I mean, he's got him around the neck. He could have, like, choked him out or something.
Or even broke his neck.
Instead, he bites his, like, jugular out of his neck.
Yeah, but, like, choking him out takes time. Right? And in the time it takes to do that, you got a brick to the face. Like, he's got to do something quick.
But he could have knocked him out or something. Yeah.
Well, it just seems like this is a slower and more painful death than even getting your neck snapped.
Yeah, the bleeding out.
Yeah.
Because a superhero wouldn't have escaped torture this way. Like, Batman would have incapacitated him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Batman doesn't kill people.
Batman would have toughed it out, I think. Or tried to tough it out. I don't know.
I mean, these guys are clearly not heroes, but the level of viciousness in that scene is pretty extreme.
And I love... We should take some time to talk about the art, especially here, because I love the way that those scenes are washed in red. Right? And there's a couple other scenes that get washed in red. It's like whenever one of the Secret Six does something brutal or somebody dies, it gets washed out in red. And that's how you know that things are getting seriously dangerous here. Motherfuckers are dying. It's not going good.
Yeah.
But aside from that simple cue, it's such a good vibrant color for those scenes.
And the art's so very bright, too. I mean, for a comic that I think is... It's weird because the tone is really bright and funny. The subject matter is so dark.
Yeah.
And even in dark scenes, we have, like, vivid colors. Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, yeah, exactly. That panel where Alex Jr., like, turns the gun back on the henchman and fires it and says, pervert. That stands out so much on the page with that bright red.
Yeah. And, I mean, even when there's not violence, we see, like, Catman's hair is really bright blonde. Ragdoll has really red hair. Jeanette, like, the touches of teal on her costume are really bright. There's no holding back in the coloring. And I don't know, that kind of sets a tone for this comic that I think goes with this weird sense of humor.
Yeah. And I think, aside from all the great color work that was done, I really, really love Nicola Scott's pencil work in this. Because there's something that's really hard to do with facial work that she does great throughout this book. Everybody's face is distinct.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, there's so many other comics. Just Green Lantern is an easy reference for me. Except for the hair, I'm pretty sure most of the time I read it, Kyle Rayner's face is the same face as Hal Jordan. And Carol Ferris' face is the same as every other non-alien female face ever drawn. Right? Like, there's so many similarities so often in comic book faces. But for some reason, somehow, Nicola Scott's able to really draw them distinctly and well and consistently. I mean, the other problem with adding a lot of detail to a face is it's hard to keep it that consistent. But Deadshot looks the same from issue 1 to issue 6.
And he looks different from Catman.
Yeah.
And I actually really liked how Scandal was portrayed with the little mole over her lip.
Yeah.
You know, you could just draw her looking like any other female. I feel like DC's not as bad, but X-Men comics, all the women's faces look very similar yes. a lot of the time. And sometimes, you know, you just put, like, a defining feature like the mole so you know which one's talking. But here, she has clear facial features, and she looks really different from Jeanette, for instance.
Yeah. And they both look really different from Tarantula, I think it was, the mm-hmm. tagalong's name?
Yeah.
And it's something that it's harder to notice when it's done right, you know, because it's something that, you know, you read a comic and it's a really good visual medium, but you're right. So often there are those other visual cues. Like I said, Kyle Rayner has the black almost mop top and Hal Jordan has his blonde crew cut, and it's easy to tell them apart by that. But so you don't notice the facial work as much. But when it's done well, it makes the characters come alive to such a greater degree, which I think is so important in a comic like this. That is so much about the character. You get so many great little character scenes that's only there. Like Bane trying to have Scandal Savage rest her head on his lap. Like, those little character scenes work so much better because you see her face and you can see the detail on her face and you know what she looks like. So you know how her face changes for mood and tone. It's so clear.
Yeah, it's even Batman, who we only see a few times. Like, he's clearly Bruce Wayne, and his facial expressions tell us what he's thinking.
Yeah. I love Nicola Scott's art in this.
It's excellent.
Aside from the awesome full pages that she does, and I think she did the covers for these two, which are phenomenal. I love the ice cream truck cover.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
Or even number one is really cool. It's like kind of spy looking with a swirl of smoke coming out of Deadshot's gun.
Yeah, it's really cool. I love the ice cream truck one. Because you look at it, a cover, and you think, oh, that's nice. They're just being silly. And then, no, they actually are all piled into an ice cream truck. Because Ragdoll's a little cray-cray.
God, I love it when Jeanette just comes along and she's like, I am not traveling across the country in that. And she gets the limo.
And then she's upset because it doesn't have champagne in it.
Yeah.
What kind of limo doesn't have champagne?
The other cover that's really cool is the hitchhiking one. I think it's number 2 or 3.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody's got their thumb out. Except for Ragdoll, who has his foot sticking out.
Yeah.
I didn't even notice that. That's great.
I was looking at issue number 7, and there's a shot after Bane
breaks the guy's
takes
back.
His venom,
yeah,
and breaks the dude's back, and it shows his vision, and it's all washed out in red, and everybody looks like Batman costume.
Yeah,
which I thought was pretty neat.
But it shows you also the reason why he doesn't take it. I mean, he says it's morally wrong, and you know, fine, that's great, whatever. But you see in that scene another reason why you know he doesn't do it. Because he has the clearness of thought to know that when he takes it, he loses control. And he just wants to murder everybody he sees. Everybody. And I mean, aside from the attic stuff, that seems to be what it is the whole reason through, you know? And when he says, fall off the wagon, even up to that point, you believe it's the addiction. But I think in his mind, that's the easy reason. That's the easy excuse. Because he doesn't want to admit that it makes him lose such control.
Yeah.
And that's the real reason that he doesn't do it.
Such a good character in this.
Yeah, I want to read the rest of this series.
I don't know how far along it is, but I remember seeing on the comic book stands there's a fucking awesome cover of Bane riding a goddamn Tyrannosaurus Rex.
What?
It is such a cool cover.
It's awesome.
So, before we read this, I was thinking that this was the series with where it's like Thunderbolts.
Yeah.
Where Amanda Waller's in charge. Is that the same thing?
No, but that's the other team that Deadshot was referring to when he says this group is less organized than blah, blah, blah.
Was that Secret Six also?
I don't know. I don't recall. I don't think that they were named Secret Six. They might have been. But Deadshot was also on that team. But after after Infinite Crisis, that team was disbanded, I think.
No, I have to look it up.
Just look up Deadshot and list all the teams that he's been on. Because, yeah, that's DC's...
Oh, Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad, okay. That's right. That's DC's version of the Thunderbolts. The villains gone good kind of team.
And, I mean, there is crossover, right? Because wasn't Harley Quinn on Secret Six at some point, and then she's Suicide Squad most
I think
of the
so.
Time?
I know Harley Quinn did try to go good for a while.
Yeah, in Mad Hatter's flashbacks to when he was part of Secret Six, Harley's on the team.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
Hmm.
Well, do we have anything else we want to say, or should we rate it and wrap it up? I can't think of anything else intelligent to say. I feel like having a burrito.
Yeah.
I like this comic. I think that, you know, Villains Gone Good seems like such an obvious way to go with a comic, but you know what? Most of them are really good. Like, this was excellent.
Yeah.
And we haven't done Thunderbolts yet, but that is a really good comic as well. I really like Thunderbolts. So.
Yeah, I really... You're right. It seems like such a trite thing, or a contrived thing. I don't know what the word is there. I think trite was right.
Trite
was right? Okay, trite. It seems like such a trite thing. But I think here it's done well because these guys haven't gone good.
Mm-mm.
They're just kind of doing the right thing because it's the mission that they got paid for.
Well, I think Villains Gone Good is maybe the wrong thing. It's villains as protagonists.
Yes, mm-hmm. There we go. Like the Deadpool comic, for example. He's mm-hmm. not really gone good. He tries.
He's kind of like... Well, I was going to say he's kind of like Catman, but not really. That's a bad comparison.
Yeah, I think it works really well here because they haven't gone all the way yet. They're thinking about it. It's a nice idea.
I mean, they're hired guns, right?
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily a good thing.
Well, and I think for a lot of these characters, no matter how much they would try to be good or want to go good, they would realize it just doesn't pay nearly as well.
I think if anyone on the team could do it, it would be Catman. But I think he would always exist in some kind of gray area.
I think Scandal could. She didn't seem particularly evil.
Yeah.
Or even, like, particularly selfish. She just... It seems like she's mostly here because she's Vandal Savage's daughter. So, I can see her being, like, a hero.
Going either way.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's rate it.
Okay. You go first.
Four and a half? You know, because when I was reading it, I was thinking, oh, this is really good, this is a really fun comic. I don't know if it has the depth of some of the other stuff that we've read, it's just really good, it's really fun. But as we're talking about it, we've really gone a lot deeper than I thought that we could have gone in this comic, which sounds like I was expecting so little from Gail Simone's writing, and I should know better.
Well, I think what you're saying is, like, typically when we read a good comic we all really like, we have trouble talking about it, because
it just comes out, this is really good because it's good, and it's good because it was interesting. Like, good comics just tend to be good comics, and there's not a whole lot to say. But I like this one because, like Jen was saying, it feels really fun for so much of it, and it's bright and happy, and you giggle at it a lot, because Gail Simone was really good at giving you those scenes and giving you those lines. But the theme is so dark and heavy. The whole thing with Junior is so fucked up, you know, and even the scenes that you see with the guys that you like Bane fucking is a protagonist who straight up murders a guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the interest of self-interest, but he straight up murders a guy, and he probably murders that other guy.
Multiple people in this.
Yeah, and he's your protagonist, and somehow you like him anyway at the end, even though you know you're not supposed to. And it's not in a, you know, sadistic kind of way that you like him either. You just, you want him to be the good guy. You just know it's so hard for him to get there. And I like that we get that kind of depth from a comic that feels so light and fun and happy. It's so much more than what it seems at first. So yeah, 4.5, because it has that great balance between the two. David, go for putting me on the spot. You're next.
All right. I'm also going to give it 4.5. Like you were saying, Andy, I think the reason we had a lot to say about this comic is because there's a lot of depth to it, but the depth is really subtle. It's like... You have to kind of... I think it took us sitting here and talking about it to pull these little tidbits out of it because, like, there's deep comics, and it's easy to tell that they're deep because, like, the characters are really introspective and we get a lot of thought bubbles and stuff. Yeah. And I don't think we get any of that. It's all carried by the conversation.
We get a little bit from Bane and a little bit from Deadshot.
Well, we see it in the flashbacks a little bit, too, but the flashbacks are usually to reference the conversation they're having.
Yeah, and it's like 2 or 3 panels. It's a really quick flashback. It's not huge.
And it's the characters talking about themselves that... Or their interaction.
Yeah.
How they interact with each other and how they react to the situations they're in. Because a lot of them react differently.
Yeah. And the other thing that works really well with the flashbacks is it's done in such a way that it looks like what's flashing through their mind at the moment, which seems like a dumb statement to say, but I think so often flashbacks are used as exposition. And here they kind of are, but it's done so naturally that it doesn't feel like it at all. Because those scenes, like you say, aren't filled with word bubbles.
I mean, it took 7 issues for us to get Catman's background, because he was kind of thinking about stuff, and as people, the other characters, because it seemed like they didn't really know each other that well.
Yeah.
And so they were learning about one another, and it showed us how complex and interesting these characters can be. Not just for their power set, because none of these guys are particularly powerful.
No. And I like that they know that, too, the way Deadshot says it. When they ask Deadshot, do you think we have a chance? And he's like, no, this bitch can take punches from Wonder Woman. We gotta get the fuck out of here. And that's just Cheetah.
You mean, do any of them have superpowers? I think Banshee, or not Banshee, Jeanette is like... the most superpowered. And she's not even on the team, right? I mean, Deadshot is a marksman. Bane is strong and can take a drug to get stronger.
Yeah.
Scandal, she's. I don't think she's immortal like her dad.
I'm not sure if she has any of that immortality or not. or if she just has the badassery every day.
It doesn't seem like she's immortal, because otherwise why would Bane freak out over her safety?
Yeah, and she got, and when, you know, she gets shot by Deadshot in the bathroom, he doesn't shoot her, he like grazes her with the bullet, and if she was really immortal, he could probably just cap her and be okay with it.
Deadshot's basically the DC version of Bullseye. He misses because he wants to.
So, I think that, you know, we these are all, like,
side characters.
They're side characters, and Gail Simone made them really interesting and complex and made you care about people, especially, like Bane. If you don't think about what we see in the comic and you just take, we spend most of our time looking at his interaction with Scandal, right? And he is very good. He's a really good person. But when we like really analyze it, we see how many people he murdered and in gruesome ways and stuff, and
doesn't have much remorse about
it. If I think about it, he's the nicest. He's probably the nicest character after Catman. And so, it just makes for a really interesting read, and like you said, it's funny, and it's bright, and it's all these things, but it also makes you think about these people that you're reading about, and, you know, and you still like them in the end.
Still rooting for them.
So yeah, 4.5.
Alright.
Okay. I kind of rambled there, sorry.
Also 4.5, and I've been, like, trending with matching other people's ratings for the past few weeks, I know, but I feel like while this comic didn't have everything I would have wanted, like, I wanted more on Jeanette, I felt like Scandal could have had a bit more character development. It was very intelligently written, and the art matched that. I will say, I think the writing did stand out a little more than the art. The art was it was extremely good, don't get me wrong, but I feel like it was supplementing the writing, whereas the writing wasn't drawing from the art so much. So, like, it was more of a one-sided interaction, I thought. Whereas sometimes we see art where, instead of telling us, we're shown in a very clear yet not, you know, hit you over the head with it way, and we didn't get as much of that here. The thing about Gail Simone's writing is she's really good at character. We saw it with All New Adam. We saw it here. And, I mean, if you're reading New 52's Batgirl, she's really good with character there, too. And it was really pleasing to read something where she had a team, because she wasn't just focusing on one person and building up personality for them. You got to see that she's capable of doing that. And I mean, I haven't read Birds of Prey, so I assume anyone who has read that is like, whoa.
I just got to the issue where she starts. Just got to it.
But it's really just pleasing to make her, or to see her make these real people who have real interactions with each other, who seem so very appealing. Like, it's really hard to dislike her characters, even if they are very dislikable.
Yeah.
So, yeah. 4.5.
You know what I want to say about the art? There are some really, really good full pages of, like, looking down at buildings, or, like, the reveal of Mad Hatter is really cool, too. But the page or pages, the splash that I really, really love is the montage of their road trip. That was awesome.
Yes.
Like, you get, like, the map background kind of thing, and then, like, the little... I just heard, like, an 80s montage going on as I went from scene to scene of them traveling across the country in the limo and in the ice cream truck. Like, that's genius. I don't know if that was Gail or Nicola, because I'm going to refer to them by their first names, apparently. But that was awesome. Yeah, so I just wanted to add that in there at the end, because apparently I'm a hog for the final word. So, next week, we're going to read Wonder Woman, The Circle, and I'm horrible about doing research. Does it say on our notes what issues that is at all?
It's from the 2006 run, and it's issues 14 through 19.
Okay. So, that's The Circle, written by Gail Simone, Wonder Woman. That's what we're going to do next, and of course, after that, we're going to wrap it up with Birds of Prey, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And that's volume 1, titled Of Like Minds.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, until then, if you want to know all this information, it's freely available on our website, which is www.atomicpowersupercast.com. You can ask us directly on Twitter,
which is twitter.com/APSupercast or at APSupercast.
Yeah. And of course, you can always, and please do subscribe on
iTunes.
And there's an email, which is atomicpowersupercast@gmail.com. And please like us on Facebook.
Yes.
Do it. Do
You're so likable.
I'm going to make a resolution to go on Facebook and post more, like, pictures and fun stuff for people to look at and enjoy.
Yes, because if you look at our news feed, it's just the episodes.
It's just, hey, an episode came out. Hey, an episode came out. Hey, an episode came out.
I got an email from Facebook this morning saying, hey, you're an admin in this group. Maybe you should post something. And I was like, yeah, maybe I should.
I mean,
I love the way that Facebook is guilting you.
Yeah. I'm sure we all go out and read comic book news on the internet, right?
Yeah.
So we could share links. And...
yeah.
We should do that. Maybe we should have this conversation away from the mic, too.
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to go do that. All right, until next week, everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
So why were you thinking that this would be my last year at Comic-Con?
Oh, not your last year, but it seems like there's less coverage about comics than...
yeah.
It seems like it's more about other entertainment media.
I heard it was all bronies this year.
Yeah, there were a lot of bronies. And there's, like, a lot of panels that aren't even Comic-Con related. Like, in the morning there was Community, which I understand there's a lot of Community fans that go to Comic-Con, right? I get that. Kind of, even though it's a sitcom, it's not really sci-fi or comic book at all. And then after that was Legend of Korra, which fits. And then Firefly's Tenure Region, which really fits. And then after Firefly was Bones.
Mm.
It's like, why is Bones at Comic-Con? Like, as much as I hate, like, the True Blood and Vampire Diaries crowd being there, at least it fits.
Yeah.
You know? But, like, why is Bones there? Why would like, I remember last year, the year before, CSI was there.
That's weird.
Why would CSI be at Comic-Con?
It's like all that Comic-Con is now is like a hype machine for movies and TV.
Yeah.
Which, some of them make sense, like science fiction movies and fantasy movies.
Yeah.
And those and TV shows of the same genre make sense.
Iron Man 3 was there this year.
That makes sense, because it's a comic book movie,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly, that's perfect.
But at the same time, like... I feel like it's too much movies and stuff, and it's like not... it doesn't... I don't know. Like, when it's happening, I'm like, man, I wish I was there. But outside of the week of Comic-Con, I'm like...
yeah.
It seems unappealing. Like, I'm glad I went once.
I feel like all the panels are just put on YouTube immediately anyway.
Yeah. Like, I got up at 4 o'clock to go to the Firefly one and the Korra one. I really want to see the Korra one, too. I got up at 4 o'clock. I got to the convention center about 5:30. And if... I hadn't had friends who had stayed the night. Like, literally slept on the sidewalk, stayed the night. I would have been in the back of the room.
Yeah.
And at which point, it's not worth it. Because in Ballroom 20, there's the stage and then two screens on the side. There's not stages or screens anywhere closer to you. And this ballroom holds about 4,000 people. So the screen, in my vision, would be about the size of my cell phone screen.
Yeah, that's... like, watch it.
So then why would I have gotten up at 4 o'clock and gone there to look at it on my screen? I mean, yeah, I would have gotten the incredible thrill of being in the same room as Summer Glau, but aside from that, there's no reason.
And then to actually get in, you have to have friends willing to be hobos for a night.
Yeah, well, so. They went to the Dr. Horrible sing-along, so they got out at 10, and then they went to dinner, and then it was 11 o'clock. And they were like, well, we could go back to the hotel and sleep for 4 hours, or we could just guarantee an awesome seat and sleep on the sidewalk. So for them, I understand it, you know?
Yeah.
So they just ran back to the hotel and grabbed, like, a couple, like, lawn chairs that they had brought with them, you know? And they just had lawn chairs, and they slept, like, on blankets.
It's weird.
I know, it's kind of weird, but it's like, if you got 4 hours, it's almost not worth it to go home and sleep.
No, I see. It's just...
And it paid off for them, because apparently at 3 o'clock, after all the parties were getting out, Joss Whedon came by, and then Adam Baldwin came by, and then Nathan Fillion came by and, like, said hi to everybody.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Like, I'm legit hella jealous of that. But, like, if it hadn't been for them saving a seat for me in the front when I was in the back of the line, it would have been not worth it at all to get up at 4 a.m. for it.
Did you actually watch the Korra panel?
Yeah.
I saw that on YouTube. On YouTube? That was pretty amazing.
It's cool how they like did the read-through and everything.
And now they're going to do 4 seasons.
Yeah.
Have you started Korra?
I've watched the first 5 or 6 episodes, and then they took them off of Nick.
Aww.
And they're not on Hulu either, so I just have to download them.
Oh, no.
Yeah. No, download them illegally.
Hmm?
You have to download them illegally.
That's really unfortunate.
I feel more bad about that than I used to.
You know, I feel more bad about it when I have access to it. Like, if it's on Hulu, if it's on Netflix, even if it's on, a paid source, right? Like, if I have to pay iTunes, or if I have to pay Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's not available anywhere. You can't even pay for it if you want to.
I'll always try to pay for it first. I always will.
Like, that's what's
because it's easy to pay for things now. Like, before, you had to wait for the DVD to come out, and then you have to go buy the DVD.
Yeah.
Now, when things are instantly online, it's I don't mind paying $9 a month. Now I have Netflix and Hulu Plus, and I'm going to cancel my everything but the cable I get for free through the homeowners association.
But it's why would you even... I don't understand why they even take it down. Leave it up. put it on Hulu. You have it digitally available streaming the next day after the show's out anyway. Why would you wait?
Yeah.
Get money for it now. And the
because at least if I watch it on Hulu, they're getting ad money and...
Ad money and your money.
But now I have to go download it illegally.
And they get nothing.
Yeah.
And then you have it. You're not even streamed. So then, then you really have to have strong motivation to go out and pay for the DVD.
I'll probably buy that on DVD.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I have Avatar already. I have to get the whole thing.
To complete the thing.
Yeah.
The other reason I think I'm not going to go next year is because I was talking to Dawn AZ from GWC,
mm-hmm.
and she was saying, for what they paid for their hotel at Comic-Con, just the hotel for her and her family, all of them flew out to Atlanta from Arizona, got the tickets for Dragon Con, paid for the hotel, and bought all the shit that they got there. The entire convention and all the food, everything at Dragon Con, all of it together, the entire trip cost less than just their hotel.
And see,
that's ridiculous.
For me too,
it's $300 a night.
After I went to Comic Con, I started looking at other cons. I really want to go to Gen Con.
Yeah.
That's the gaming convention in Indianapolis every year. And I was thinking about, logistically, that would be kind of hard because I'd have to bring HeroClix, Mompok Armies, Magic decks, and then I'd have to bring stuff back. But it would still probably be awesome.
Yeah. It would be.
I've never been to Indianapolis.
And there's so many great conventions, too. Emerald City Comic-Con, I always hear great things coming out of there. And like you said, Seattle's awesome. I would love to visit Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And fucking Phoenix Comic-Con's getting good. Dallas Comic-Con, apparently the Firefly class was half of them were at Dallas Comic-Con. Just walking around, doing signings, hanging out. Mm-hmm. Because it's not like San Diego, where they'll get mobbed just walking around. Because there's not 170,000 people. There's 30, you know, so they can actually get around and do things, and you can meet them and hang out with them a little bit.
We should plan to go to a smaller con altogether.
Yeah,
I think it would be awesome.
Yeah,
my first choice would be Emerald City.
I think,
but I mean, if that's too much, we could even go to WonderCon.
Yeah,
are they still having?
It's in Anaheim.
Oh, it's Anaheim now.
Well, even they have the Image one that was in Oakland last year.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
My only fear about Emerald City Comic Con is that I will get shanked to death if I go to that and not go to PAX that year. I don't want to go. I honestly don't want to go to PAX. I have no interest.
You know, other than Penny Arcade and video game stuff, I don't even know what's at PAX or why I would go.
There's a lot of tabletop gaming stuff. Yeah. A friend of mine is actually going to be a gym leader for Pokemon this year. They have a lot of panels and they have a video game floor where they let people do an expo. But, I don't know, it's not my crowd.
Yeah. But, I realize I save up money every year to go to Comic-Con, and it's to the detriment. I would love to go to BlizzCon one year before they stop having it.
We tried to do that. It was so hard. We almost got tickets one year.
I went in 2007 before it, exploded. It was awesome. And there was, it was, nothing. There was, an area for... There was one panel area where they just, had people rotating. There was one huge area set up for StarCraft II demos. There was one area... This was before Lich King came out.
Mm.
So there was one area set up for Lich King where you could play for 30 minutes on a pre-made character in, Borean tundra or something. And it was awesome. And then, like, we just, like, walked around and there was, like, different things set up and I don't know, it was cool. And we met a bunch of our SoCal guild members came, and a couple that was in my old guild came from Texas, and we went to, like, downtown Disney and got kicked out of the ESPN zone.
Yeah,
it was awesome.
Yeah, it was supposed to be, like, this huge double date thing. We were pairing up with another couple from Florida who we had known on WoW for a long time. But then, that was the year the ticket sales just blew the fuck up.
Oh, yeah.
And their servers crashed repeatedly. So, by the time we got the tickets in our cart and, like, clicked pay, someone else had bought them.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Balls.
Yeah, like, we made this whole cool, like, so we got there, like Wednesday night or something. We got our badges, and then we went to Medieval Times, and then went to the con the next day, and then the next night, and then that night we went to Downtown Disney, to ESPN, and then we went to the con the next day, and then we went to, like, Coco's or something in the middle of the night.
That's awesome.
And because it's not so incredibly oversold like San Diego, like, you can afford to get cool shit there. Like, I bought
so much, like, WoW. I have, like, so much, like, WoW swag because of, and I, like, got it all at BlizzCon.
I know, there's, like, BlizzCon coasters at your
Yeah, those coasters that I have. Have you seen them?
Yeah.
The Blizzard coasters, those are from
really?
BlizzCon.
Awesome.
See, and, like, with BlizzCon, you get cool shit just for showing up.
Like I have
you
the,
get in-game
I have,
stuff.
I have the Murloc suit with a little BlizzCon flag.
See, like, there's so much cool shit at other conventions, and I feel like the reason I don't go to other ones is because I have to save all year for the money for Comic-Con. Because fucking, it's like, even if you split it four ways, $300 a night for a hotel is not kosher.
Yeah.
If you're spending five nights there, because Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, yeah, five nights.
Jesus.
It's five nights, you split it, even if it's $300 a night, you split it four ways, what is that? It's like $75 a night for five nights. That's a shitload of money, is what
just
that is.
Just
want
to point out, I stayed...
Just for a bed.
It's like $400-something dollars a person.
Yeah,
for
bed.
5 days.
For a bed.
I went to London for an entire week, and we had an apartment, Crystal and I. We paid like $200 each.
Yeah.
$250 each.
Yeah.
So that's like fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I hear the con in New York is really good.
Me too, but I know that's also another one that...
It's like crazy, right?
Yeah, that gets expensive and sells out fast. I hear that New York and San Diego are starting to get competitive with announcements and stuff. Like, New York's legitimately coming up on the world.
I think Dragon Con would
that's
be
funny
new.
To hear,
up in the world.
That's funny to hear that it's coming up in the world against San Diego.
Hey, well...
There's probably people in New York who don't know what San Diego is.
It's up by Sacramento somewhere, right?
Exactly.
It's where they surf. Everyone
the
surfs every
bridges.
Day.
Yeah, everybody in California is a surfer.
It's true.
So we should probably actually record now.
That's
why
I was late. I was surfing. Didn't you know?
Me too. All day, every day.